Medical Frontiers is an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnosis, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.
Well, good evening. Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer here with another session of Medical Frontiers. And Rob, I guess the boys are back from Dublin?
They are back.
And, you know, happier plane trip back when you win.
You know, being that we have a former member of the military, we thank you for your service. In studio tonight, do you know, 74,000 fans were in Dublin to watch this. They said that was the most one-time overseas travel from the United States to Europe since World War II. That's how many people, and they were sending troops, that's how many people left this country to go across the Atlantic to watch that football
game.
So
like three quarters of them were from the United States, because it's that stadium holds over
100.
100.
And yeah. By the way, there's no more Guinness in Ireland. Gone. No more. Gone.
All right. Okay, tonight on Medical Frontiers, we're talking about reproductive medicine. We haven't done a show on reproductive medicine now for a few years, and the folks that we had on then are no longer with AHN. They've gone on, retired, or gone in other places or whatever, and we're very fortunate this evening to have two subspecialties in reproductive medicine from AHN, and we're going to be talking about that, you know. How do you make the diagnosis, and what are the things that can be done to help couples who are infertile have healthy children? So first I'd like to introduce Dr. Terrence Lewis. Dr. Lewis is the medical director of Allegheny Health Network Center for Reproductive Medicine. And how long have you been with the AHN, doctor?
I've been here at AHN for 1.5 years now.
1.5 years, yes. 18 months. 18 okay, months. He spent some time in the military, 17 years, I guess, down in Washington, D.C. at Walter Reed.
That is correct.
Yeah, had some training there and just stayed on, huh?
Just stayed at Walter Reed.
Okay. Reproductive medicine, what is it? Tell us what it is.
Sure. So reproductive medicine involves the science of really understanding human reproduction and applying
which
that
is
knowledge.
Important.
Yes.
Because we have to have the human, you know, go from generation to generation. If we don't have reproduction, you know, in one generation, it can disappear.
That is so true. That is so true. And so applying that knowledge to patients who are suffering with infertility. And, we always frame, when I talk with patients, we frame the initial workup by talking about fecundability or couples' ability to achieve a pregnancy per month. And it's much lower than most people think. And so I'd ask if you care to take a guess what fecundability is or what a 21-year-old couple's ability to achieve a pregnancy per month is.
Okay. A 21-year-old couple having, say, normal sexual relationship for a year, if they don't have, and that would say having intercourse a few times a week for a year, I would say that it's probably around 25%.
Wow, that's great. 18% per month.
18%. 18%. Well, that wasn't too far off.
And that's just conceiving a pregnancy. Yeah. That's not taking home a live baby.
And so, you know, the fear of somebody getting pregnant is more of a fear than reality.
That is true.
But you still need to use protection if you don't want a child.
That is true.
Okay. All right. So is the definition of infertility is a young, healthy couple otherwise without knowing sperm count or anything about the woman, is that the diagnosis of infertility, not
sure.
getting pregnant within a year?
Historically, it's been based on a woman's age. So if a woman is less than 35 and she's had 12 months of regular unprotected intercourse without a conception, that would be defined as infertility. Or if a woman is over 35, we usually give them 6 months. So those definitions are changing with more recent definitions.
Okay. And our other guest this evening is Dr. Meredith Snook, S-N-O-O-K, Snook.
Yep.
Just like Snook,
right.
Only it's Snook. Yeah.
Yep. And the fish.
Okay. And she is also a specialist in reproductive medicine and had her training at Pittsburgh and spent a lot of time at Pitt, at McGee, and saw the light, and now she's with AHN. You folks don't deliver babies, but you take care of the surgical needs and so on for people who are having trouble getting pregnant. Dr. Snook, why did you decide to go into reproductive medicine?
So I actually always thought that I was going to be a nutritionist or work in sports nutrition. That was my major as an undergrad at Penn State. And there was a summer that I was home from college between my first and second years. And I shadowed a midwife and I saw a delivery. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I am going to deliver babies. And at the time, transitioned into some of the pre-med courses with the mindset of becoming an OBGYN. In college, I worked for 3 years in a research lab looking at the effects of diet and exercise on the menstrual cycle. And I think that kind of piqued my interest in reproductive medicine. But it wasn't until I was a resident at McGee that I recognized that this is the field for me because of the patients. They're healthy. They want to do anything in their power. You have a mutual goal. I love the manipulation of the menstrual cycle and how you can just help someone in such an acute, important time of their lives and really make some life-changing outcomes for them. And the science is always changing. We're always learning. Even in the time that we've been practicing since fellowship graduation, I mean, things are constantly changing. It's hard to even stay up with how people are doing things differently, you know, from 1 year to the next.
So you're also surgically trained, but you know endocrinology is such an important part of reproduction, you know, and the female hormones and so on and
that. It's a very delicate cycle.
It's a very delicate thing, and we men know that sometimes even in normal menstrual cycles, sometimes will change a woman's mood and all with menstrual cycles each month or so on, and there's also a lot of variation in how many periods a woman has in a year. You know, there are some that don't have a period every month, but yet they can, it's normal. It's normal. It's not really.
I would beg to say that not having a menstrual cycle outside of using a hormone to maybe have that outcome, like being on birth control, is not normal.
So we
always want to see that. We actually see those patients as well that might have problems with their menstrual cycle or not getting a menstrual cycle, even if they're not trying to get pregnant.
So I guess the normal, the way we were made, is 28 days, you know.
Give or take a few,
And some women are right on the dot, you know, every 28 days, you know, and sometimes the length of the menstrual cycle varies from woman to woman too. Yeah.
Right. We tend to worry when, and we really define a cycle from the first day of full flow 1 month to the next day of full flow, the next time that happens, day one to day one. And we would become concerned if that cycle length is shorter, like maybe 24 days or less, or longer than 35 days.
Okay. All right, we need to take a break. This is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about reproductive medicine this evening. And if you have had a problem getting pregnant and you needed the services of reproductive medicine physicians to have a baby, we'd love to hear your story. Give us a call, 866-391-1020. Or if you just have questions about any of this in reproductive medicine, 866-391-1020. Our experts are in the studio tonight. We'll be back. Okay, we're back out of the break for Medical Frontiers. We're talking about reproductive medicine this evening with Dr. Meredith Snook and Dr. Terrence Lewis. They are both specialists in reproductive medicine. And Dr. Lewis, the population in the United States, is my understanding, is that we're just on a little bit on the positive side. we're having just about as many people born who are dying each year.
That's
it's
correct.
Just a little bit on the plus side.
Yes.
And a lot of countries are on the negative side. But, and so, what is the reason for that? Are we less fertile? Are we just having smaller families? Or we have a lot of couples who don't want any kids at all? Is there a reason? Or all of the above?
I think it's all of the above.
Yeah. Yeah, would you like to say anything more about that? When were the most fertile? Well,
sure. I think that varies. I think when you look at the data, humans were supposed to have children younger. And I think many couples are electing to wait to have children. And so the longer you wait, the fewer children you typically have.
Yeah, you take the rural society, back 100 years ago, couples got together earlier.
Yes.
They're 18, 19, 20 years old, started having children earlier and larger families,
Yes.
You look at the Amish, they get married very young.
Yes.
And I don't think they practice birth control at all. And they have a lot of children. I mean, we're talking about 10, 11, 12 children.
Yes.
And so, it's one of the reasons that the Amish community keeps getting larger because they have lots of kids.
Yes.
But wars can interrupt that, because the men are off to war and they're not around to get their wives pregnant. But we need to at least be even. If we want to continue to have a society.
That is true.
And I guess a woman has to have a child to replace herself. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then she has to have another child to replace her husband. And so you would have to have something over two children per couple in order just to stay even. And if you have another one, then there'll be an increase. Like if each couple who wanted children had three, we would increase our population.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
That's
from a statistic standpoint?
Yes.
Yeah. That's something I learned in college I think it was actually in economics, that a woman has to have more than two to increase the population. Yeah. So, are there, we talked about the age and people holding off and so on, but from a pure medical reason, are there environmental reasons that fertility may be somewhat decreased than it was 50 years ago?
Yeah, good question. So specifically looking at men, we know that sperm counts have gone down tremendously over the last 50 years.
Any reason? And
we think environmental exposures. So we're exposed to many more things in the environment through the plastics that we use to transport our food. Our milk comes in plastic now. And so we think that there are a number of those factors that play a part.
So it's multifactorial.
That is correct.
It's not just one thing that, do you have anything to add?
Processed foods. Things like fragrances and detergents, lotions, like all of these parabens, phthalates have been linked to changes in actually puberty, but also sperm parameters, perhaps some egg quality parameters. It's just a really hard thing to study, and it's also really hard to eliminate all of that out of our lives because it's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, what about women who have been on birth control pills for a long time? Does that have any influence on fertility?
We don't believe that it does. I would say that there is some evidence that coming off of a birth control, your ability to get pregnant within those first few months may be less compared to someone else who was using condoms, but at 1 year, at 12 months after discontinuing condoms or oral birth control, the same number of people will have gotten pregnant after that 1 year's time. People tend to think that taking oral birth control may perhaps help or help their fertility or prevent them from losing eggs if they're not ovulating, but that is not true. We are constantly losing eggs all of the time. We have no control over that other than living the healthiest lifestyle that we can, not smoking. We know that women who smoke cigarettes lose their eggs faster. They go through menopause earlier. So being on a birth control pill, an oral pill, maybe suppresses ovulation. So you're not releasing that egg every month, but you're still constantly losing hundreds, if not thousands, of eggs all of the time. Birth control can also falsely give someone, I think, reassurance that they may have normal fertility because they think that they're getting a real period, even though it's really just withdrawal bleeding from coming off of the hormones that are in the birth control pill every month.
Okay, a female is born with all the eggs they will ever have.
That's right.
Okay. Any idea how many eggs that is?
It's about 1 to 2 million. So we actually have the most number of eggs as a fetus, like 20 weeks gestation.
Wow.
And some will be rescued. Some will enter meiosis one and essentially be rescued, and the others undergo atresia between 20 and 40 weeks or 20 weeks and being delivered. So kind of the thresholds that we always learn about, you're born with one to 2 million. There may be about 300,000 around the time of puberty. You hit 37 on average. There's about 25,000 left. And once you hit that threshold, you start losing them even faster. Okay. So like this rate of acceleration of losing eggs is higher. And even when we go through menopause, there's about 1,000 eggs. They're just...
Well, they're lost during ovulation.
Right.
Or...
One during ovulation. So, but that... A woman that's never on birth control in her whole reproductive lifespan and maybe doesn't have children, maybe ovulates 400 or 500 eggs.
Wow. Okay.
But we're born with, you know, 1 to 2 million.
1 to 2 million.
Even when we go through menopause, there's about 1,000 left. They're just not responsive to signals anymore, and they're not good quality.
Okay. So during ovulation, about how many eggs come down the oviduct? Just one?
Just one.
Yeah. Maybe two.
Really?
So, yeah, with twins.
And so the other ones just sort of pass away just time. Yeah.
Well, there's different the eggs are in what are called follicles, which are small cysts, okay? And they're all different kind of stages of these follicles in the ovary. There are some that are very dormant that you could only see if you looked underneath the microscope, if you had removed the ovary. There are some that have moved into one stage of development, another stage, and can be seen on ultrasound as little, very small cysts. We call those antral follicles. And then if someone is ovulating every month, essentially one of those gets selected, and that's the one that they release the egg from and ovulate from. But a lot of other ones are kind of constantly dying off if they weren't selected to ovulate.
Okay. Identical twins, one egg is split. Fraternal twins, two eggs, has to be.
That's correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have that all straight. and of course, as a woman ages, there's less of a chance of ovulation, just from the fact that not as many eggs are as available, right? Is that true?
I wouldn't say that a woman doesn't ovulate as much, right? It's when women get to the perimenopausal stage that may be true.
Yeah.
But prior to that, we think that they ovulate an egg.
Okay. Well, this is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about reproductive medicine. Two specialists in that area. So give us a call, 866-391-1020. We'll be back.
Medical Frontiers is an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network.
Okay, we're back for another session of Medical Frontiers, and this evening we're talking about reproductive medicine. So give us a call at 866-391-1020. We have two experts in the studio, a male and a female, so we could talk about reproductive medicine as it affects both of the sexes. But let's go right to our phone lines, and Helen is our first caller. Good evening, Helen. How are you?
Okay. I have a niece that got married at 23, and she did everything, you know, to try to get pregnant. Finally, she was diagnosed with a tilted uterus, which I never heard of. Maybe it's I'm getting the wrong information. Well, anyway, she had surgery, and she still didn't get pregnant. But she got pregnant at the age 36 and 38, finally, and tried from age 23 to 36. Isn't that something?
That's amazing.
Okay, yeah. That is a long time. And Dr. Snook, how about that? Is that unusual?
I would say that timeline to become pregnant is quite unusual, not knowing kind of the whole history and any other thing that might be impacting her ability to become pregnant. Just usually in 1 year in someone who's, you know, young, healthy, having regular unprotected intercourse, about 85% of people will have gotten pregnant in 1 year, maybe another handful over the second year. So for her to, you know, try for 12, 13 years, that's
a long time.
But it's always a miracle.
Yeah, and Dr. Lewis, the tilted uterus, the sperm doesn't know whether the uterus is tilted or not. It's going to find its way in there. Whether it's tilted or not, right?
Usually,
not going to cause infertility.
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct. I always tell women about 40% of women will have a uterus that's tilted forward. We call that antiverted. About 40% will have a uterus that's tilted backwards. That's called retroverted.
Yeah.
Only about 20% of women will have an axial uterus or uterus that's straight up and down. Yeah. A uterus that's straight up and down.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the normal position is sort of straight up and down.
All of them are normal.
They're all normal.
They're all just normal.
A different position.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And fortunately, Helen's niece, she had two children in her 30s. So sometimes you just wait a while. Right?
Yes. So, I'm sure they're both blessings. Yeah.
Yes.
But what about, you know, what are some of the things that can be done, you know, like IVF and so on? Let's talk about that. How can a couple be helped with some of the technology that's going on? Do you want to start with that, Dr.
Sure, sure. So when patients come in to see Dr. Snook or I, we're committed to providing them with a comprehensive evaluation to find out where a potential breakdown in the system is. So is there an issue with the sperm? Is there an issue with a woman's uterus, her fallopian tubes, or does she have decreased egg counts? And so we provide a comprehensive assessment to identify specifically where issues lie.
How successful is that? How often can you pinpoint the exact reason that a woman may have a problem with fertility?
Yeah, we pinpoint it quite frequently.
Okay.
And so really, when you think about human reproduction, you need a sperm, good sperm, you need a good egg, you need at least one open fallopian tube, and you need a good, healthy uterus. And so those are the things that we evaluate during our workup. And depending on the cause, so if there's a blocked tube or two blocked tubes, then that couple needs IVF.
Okay.
Right? If the male partner has issues
and that's in vitro fertilization.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes, sir. Explain what that is.
So in vitro fertilization is a process whereby women take medications that help them develop multiple eggs at one time. And we go in it when the timing is right, and we extract the eggs from her ovary in the operating room. And we then take the eggs and fertilize them with partner sperm or donor sperm to create embryos, and then we put an embryo back into her uterus.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how developed is that embryo? How many days or weeks?
Good. Yeah. We usually grow embryos out to what's called the blastocyst stage. Okay. And that occurs on the fifth, sixth, or seventh day after fertilization of the egg.
So they're a week or less.
That is correct.
Old.
That is
correct. Dr. Snook, do you have anything to add to that? Are the eggs that are recovered from the woman, is that done laparoscopically?
It used to be, actually. It used to be. We, with the advancement of ultrasound, we now use a needle that's attached to a transvaginal ultrasound probe.
Okay.
So the egg retrieval procedure happens under IV sedation, so the patient's comfortable but breathing on their own. With most of the time, a transvaginal ultrasound, and that needle can be advanced through the vaginal wall into the follicles or those cysts that hold the egg on the ovaries. And that's what we can see when we're looking at the ultrasound as we're performing the procedure.
How big are those eggs?
About the size of like a period at the end of the sentence, I think, like that with the cumulus cells around them. You definitely need to have
magnification.
So we're handing off fluid from the follicles or the cysts that hold the egg. We're handing that off to someone in the embryology lab. They're essentially pouring that fluid into little petri dishes and using a microscope to look at that fluid, sort through blood clots, looking for eggs that are surrounded by cells that help them kind of stick to the wall of the follicle.
Okay.
And they're kind of in real time telling us how many eggs we're getting throughout the procedure.
Okay. So then also under the microscope, you introduce that egg to sperm.
There can be, there's two different ways that you can fertilize the eggs outside of the body. One is called conventional IVF or conventional fertilization, where essentially they put one egg surrounded by thousands of sperm, like even 75,000, and then put that into the incubator and the next day check and see if it fertilized. Fertilization actually takes overnight, about 16, 18 hours. The other way that we fertilize the eggs is a process called ICSI or intracytoplasmic sperm injection. To do that, the eggs are stripped from all of those cells that surrounded the egg. And if the egg is mature, there's a andrologist that goes through the sperm specimen, picks out the best looking normal swimming sperm and aspirates the sperm into a very small needle and injects the sperm into the egg. So kind of bypasses all of those more natural ways that the sperm may find the egg. And so that process can help overcome if there's a very severe male factor component to infertility.
So we're talking about things that are microscopic.
Yes.
You don't see them with the naked eye. And so the sperm is smaller than the egg?
Much, much smaller.
Much, much smaller. So the egg is like a dot from a pencil on a page.
Or like the period at the end of a sentence.
Yeah. Period at the end of a sentence. Okay. Typed. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at a period here.
That's probably with the cumulus cells around it,
And so then to actually inject sperm into that dot, you have to have a pretty steady hand, right?
Yes, and there's actually like a little holder that holds the egg in place while you stabilize it so that you can use the needle to inject it on the other side.
I mean, those people have to be very, very
highly trained.
Highly trained. And do you have any idea what the magnification is to do that? Is it 10 times, 100 times, or?
Yeah. I don't know.
I really think
it's something like 100 times.
100 times.
To be honest, I don't know. Yeah. It's been a while since I've
Because then that dot looks a lot bigger if it's 100 times bigger. And, of course, the sperm are smaller than that, you know. Okay, we need to take another break. This is really fascinating for an orthopedic surgeon. Okay, we need to take a break. And we're talking about reproductive medicine this evening with Dr. Lewis and Dr. Snook from age. And give us a question. Give us a call if you have any questions or if you have had help from these type of physicians to get pregnant. 866-391-1020. We'll be back. Okay, we're back for our last segment of Medical Frontiers. We're talking about reproductive medicine tonight. And give us a call if you have a question about how you can get pregnant if you're not able to get pregnant in the normal way. There is help, and we're talking about that tonight. 866-391-1020. We talked a little bit about sperm, and we talked about the sperm counts in males in the United States is decreasing probably because of diet, environmental reasons, and so on, that type of thing. And what is a critical sperm count where the male has given a specimen and sperm count has been done at Dr. Lewis? How many thousands or what of sperm do we need to create pregnancy?
Good
well, only one, but
that's right, just one. But it depends on the treatment modality that mm-hmm. we are using. If we are performing an intrauterine insemination on a woman, the literature really suggests having at least 10 million motile sperm. That means 10 million soldiers that are going to attack the egg. If we're doing IVF and we're using the process that Dr. Snook described, ICSI, we just need one motile sperm for every egg that we get.
Uh-huh.
So it really varies and depends on the treatment type that we're...
Sure.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's a lot of sperm when you're talking about, millions of sperm.
Oh, yes.
You know,
yes.
But that increases the chances. What would be considered a low sperm count in a man?
Sure. So the World Health Organization has set the standards for semen analyses, and we like to see a concentration of at least 15 million sperm per milliliter.
Yeah.
Of ejaculate. We like to see at least 1.5 milliliters of ejaculate in the sample. And out of those sperm, we like to see at least 40% with forward progression moving forward.
Having, good swimmer.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
You don't count them one by one. There has to be a way that you estimate how many millions there are. How is that done?
Yes. Yeah. We have a special plates that have a grid on it, and so you basically count the number of sperm you see in a grid.
Yeah,
and that gives you multiply it, and it gives you the count.
So you don't have to be able to count from one to a million in a hurry.
That's right.
Fortunately, not.
That's right. There are some automated systems that will do it for you.
The embryos mm-hmm. that we have. Dr. Stook, those have to be refrigerated?
Cryopreserved.
Or they're frozen?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's alive, but that life has been held in hibernation.
Suspended.
Okay, suspended until it is thawed and used.
Mm-hmm.
How long can an embryo be cryopreserved?
That's a great question. So the kind of historical way that we used to freeze embryos was called a slow freeze process. Now we're using what's called vitrification, probably more so over the last 10 to 15 years. Vitrification is like a flash freeze in a glass-like state. And so there's been a lot of maybe publicity around some embryos that were, I believe, created in the 90s. And someone adopted those embryos and have had two children from those embryos. And that was a slow freeze. And those embryos, I think, were cryopreserved for 20 plus years. That's not the norm, but it has been reported out there. With vitrification, which is the gold standard now, we tend to think that embryos can be preserved that way kind of indefinitely. I know that there was a large study published out of China a couple of years ago that demonstrated that after 6 years, perhaps the success rate for live birth was a little bit lower. But, that's still, it was still very encouraging that embryos could be cryopreserved for longer than that. We tend to see people that desire completing their family, usually within that kind of a time frame. But I'm just trying to think if I've, what's the longest I've seen, and I'd have to think about it for a little bit, maybe
okay,
8 years.
Dr. Lewis, how long can an individual egg, not a fertilized egg, or sperm be banked? Years?
Sure. Sperm indefinitely.
Okay.
Sperm indefinitely.
And that's cryopreserved also?
That is correct. In liquid nitrogen.
And how about eggs?
Oocytes, the freezing technology for oocytes has recently gotten better. So it used to be not so good a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And so we've improved the freezing of oocytes. And so we think that those are going to be good indefinitely as well.
And there are times when a man may want to have his sperm preserved because he has to have radiation treatment for something like that, or some chemotherapy or everything that would decrease the viability of sperm and so on. And a woman also may want to preserve eggs because of medical treatment for something else. And how about a, like... Are there women that want to preserve eggs so that she can have a child when she's
Absolutely.
50 or 60?
Well, I don't know about that. But women, we see consults like this multiple times a week. Patients that are, maybe in their early, mid-30s, they don't have a partner. They know that they want to have children. They're very interested in what's called planned oocyte cryopreservation, or planning for their future fertility. So, not necessarily planning to undergo anything that might render them infertile, but, potentially undergoing the process of ovarian stimulation and the egg retrieval to freeze eggs to use in the future, because, age is the biggest predictor of someone's ability to become pregnant. Someone's only going to have a higher chance getting pregnant with 34-year-old eggs than 40-year-old eggs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is it expensive to set aside some sperm or eggs for future use?
Certainly less expensive for sperm.
Yeah.
Oocyte cryopreservation involves undergoing stimulation, and so that tends to be a little more expensive.
Right. Yeah.
But the good news is that many insurance companies do provide some coverage.
They do. And those freezers and so on have to be protected for electrical outages.
Absolutely.
And have emergency generators.
Yep.
And everything like that to make sure that the temperature does not drop and that
Absolutely.
Type of thing. Well, I want to thank both of you. I've learned so much about this.
Thank you for having us. It's been a great evening. Yeah.
Okay. In the future, you want to say a word about the next 10, 15 years? Do you think it changes of reproductive medicine?
I personally think that our world is just going to be blown with the advancements that we will make in 10 to 15 years, probably to the point that we can't even fathom what some of those things are now.
Okay. Well, thank you both. Wonderful job. And we'll do it again. This is Medical Frontiers saying good night. And we'll be back in a week. And remember, ahn.org or 412-DOCTORS is how you can get an appointment.
Medical Frontiers was an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers was intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnosis, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.